take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
When I think of UFOs in Brazil, I automatically think of Dr. Roger Lear. Matter of fact, he just finished a book called UFO Crash in Brazil. And so obvious, and we've been told a lot here, so obviously I think of Dr. Lear when the subject of Brazil comes up. And like the biggest news you could imagine breaking over the UFO community this night, we've got a story entitled Major UFO Breakthrough in Brazil. That's it. The Brazilians are going to open their UFO files to the world. And that's a pretty big story. I mean, imagine if it were the U.S. opening our files to the world. But Brazil, nevertheless, where there's been a hell of a lot of UFO activity, is just going to throw its files open. They have chosen a people in ufology in Brazil to make these documents available to. And these people have been allowed into some of the most secret government installations in Brazil to receive this information. It is a pretty exciting story, to be sure. So who better to have on tonight? On the very day the story breaks, I called him up about it earlier, and Dr. Roger Lear. Dr. Lear, author of Aliens and the Scalpel, has been said to be one of the world's most important leaders in physical evidence research involving the field of ufology. He and his surgical team have performed 9 surgeries on alleged alien abductees. This resulted in the removal of 10 separate and distinct objects suspected of being alien implants. These objects have been scientifically investigated by some of the most prestigious labs in the world. Their findings have been baffling, and some comparisons have been made to meteorite-like samples. Dr. Lear anticipates performing more surgeries in the future and will investigate the physiological and biological aspects of the abduction phenomenon. He has also formed a nonprofit organization for this purpose called ANS Research, Inc. Here is Dr. Roger Lear. Dr. Lear.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening, Doctor. And, gee, your latest book, UFO Crash in Brazil, how it resonates with today's breaking news. Now, you tell him, I called you a couple hours, few hours before the show tonight and said, "Whoa, look what's breaking in the news." And you said, "Well, that wasn't supposed to be out. That was supposed to be secret or something, right?"
Yeah, that's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
And the reason for this is that for some months now, I was privy to the information of what was going on in Brazil.
And you haven't been able to talk?
Haven't been able to talk about it. Sworn to secrecy. Secrecy.
Why? Why sworn to secrecy? I mean, if Brazil is going to open its files to the world, why should that be secret?
Well, it's not that it's secret. It's that what was going on was secret, because so many times, as you well realize, Art, in the strange field of ufology, people make claims to various things.
That's true.
Predictions and so on, and it never happens.
That's true.
So it was believed, you know, why upset the apple cart when these things were in the making, and it looks like things were going to pan out. But
okay, I can buy that. Yeah, I can buy that. And you would keep it secret until, but here it is. Any idea of how it leaked out?
Yes, I know the whole story via H.A. Gerard, who's one of the leading ufological researchers in Brazil. I've worked with him many times over. I've been down there, as you know, many times, and he's set things up for me to investigate various aspects of ufology in Brazil. The individuals that were involved also, I know them all. They're all friends of mine, and very sincere investigators who absolutely have nothing to gain from any of their work. They're just very, very sincere. The first thing that happened was that AJ, through UFO Magazine Brazil, started a campaign to get the secrecy, away from the government and where it belongs, out to the people. So what he did was he started a petition drive through the magazine and got, thousands of signatures asking the government to release this information.
I know, but normally that results in a complete brick wall. I mean, you can hand them millions of signatures and nothing happens. Hold on. This is a good hook for everybody. But in this case, well, we'll find out. I wonder if the government was ready to do it anyway, and they just used this as a sort of a, I don't know, look how responsive we are kind of deal to let it happen at this moment, or if they really did have that effect. I wonder. It's really a good question. Petition or not, if you delivered one to the U.S. government, they'd laugh in your face. So do you think the military was ready to do this anyway, and they just kind of took the opportunity to look responsive?
Well, Art, my life has gone from one synchronicity to another, so it's really hard to say. But look at it this way. How many rocks you have to throw at the beehive before the bees attack?
Well, sometimes only one.
That's right. So here, they didn't have what we have here. There's no Freedom of Information Act in Brazil. They don't have the opportunity to go through a government institution and ask for information as we are guaranteed to have here. Only to get it and have it 90% of it blacked out with a black pen, or now modernized whiteout. Though they don't have that at all.
Right.
So they were seeking, some similar opportunity. Now, with that, you got to remember that, on my website years ago, I put up a document that was signed by Daniel Golden from NASA with agreement with the Brazilians, and they were supposed to turn over any non-terrestrial material to us for further development. And then the Brazilians were guaranteed to share in the proceeds of the U.S. investigation development of those materials. So we've got to remember that. Then I have also documents as to how the government was supposed to handle UFOs, period, which was written way back in the 1960s. So you take all those factors, and then you ask the big question, what's going on now? Is it the government, or is it a branch of the government, like the Air Force? Now, I always remember Bob Dean's story about the fights that used to go on in Europe when the UFOs went over Europe, and they couldn't find out a doggone thing from the government. So the military got together, according to what Bob has to say, and did their own investigation. Well, how do we know that the Air Force, in this case, is not pretty sick about not being told what's going on? As a matter of fact, in a conversation that AJ had with one of the leading Air Force generals, is where this all started in the first place, he got a strange phone call. And he was absolutely bowled over, thought it was a joke or, somebody was after him. The general called and said that, he would like to talk to him about the release of a certain amount of information. Well, AJ couldn't believe what he was hearing. So he, another conversation, had told him that they were literally kept in the dark. I mean, they had the documents. They had, all the reports, everything, and big investigations of three major UFO flaps in Brazil, ending with one in 1986, where there were literally thousands of UFOs and interactions occurring. And in one file alone, there's over 100 pictures, I understand. So AJ didn't know whether to believe it or not. So that's about the time when I began to hear about this information.
Yeah, I've heard about the 100 pictures. Let me stop you there. Do you have any sense of how important these photographs are, how detailed or how good they are, and what they are of?
Well, from what I've been able to understand as of late, they are wonderful, you know, Air Force photos taken of objects at varying distances, at varying speeds. There's documents indicating, you know, the radar sightings. There are evidently also photos taken from jets, with numerous jets were scrambled to chase these things.
You think they're clear, unambiguous photographs, Doctor?
Well, I haven't seen them, but from what I heard, you don't have to be a scholar to recognize these as disks.
I guess another question is, this is pretty big news. Do you think they really are releasing everything, or do you think they're doing a measured release and saying they're releasing everything? A question like that always has to be asked.
Well, it's speculative, but I know of the three cases and the three flaps that they're releasing information on, and they are the three biggest ones that were ever investigated by the Brazilian researchers. That's almost like saying, Art, well, let's take, the crash at Roswell and the Trent photos and a couple of other things, and we're going to release that to the public here in the U.S. and tell everybody all about it. So if you make that comparison, I think that, you know, these are three major things. It certainly is not everything.
Certainly it's not everything. So then it is measured.
I would say at this point it's measured, you know. But, you know, here comes my pessimistic view. We're all excited. I mean, I am really excited. I had a talk with Whitley today and explained a couple of things to him because he put it up on his website. And it's probably on every website.
Sure as hell isn't going to hurt your book either, is it?
No. Again, another synchronicity, because we had planned this before this news ever broke. But here it is. You know, it's on the Internet. It's all over the Internet. You honestly think we're going to hear about this on CBS, NBC, ABC, or by Bill Riley?
You know, it's possible. I mean, this is a pretty big story. An entire nation decides to open UFO files. Yeah, I think it's a pretty big story. I think it's deserving of the nightly news.
Well, I certainly hope you're right.
No, I think so. I mean, look, even if it's a sort of last kicker story, for the general public, a whole country like Brazil opening their files, no, that's a big story.
I think it's big. I always thought that there was a possibility that some release of information could come out of Brazil, but I really expected that it would come out of a more renegade country like France, because I was over in France. They invited me to attend an SSE meeting over there, and strange thing happened there was that they almost canceled the meeting when they heard that I was going to be there.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Very, very strange stuff. And then they wanted to know if I would appear at sort of a small secret meeting. And I did. And there was about 15 scientists there. Interestingly enough, including one member of the French Space Administration and one member of the Department of the Interior.
Gee whiz, Doctor. I'm recalling that not too many years ago, the French had this big committee of scientists who shocked the world by saying they believed that the evidence for UFOs justified a large government investigation, an official investigation, right?
Vis-a-vis the Comitat report.
Yes. Yeah, so, why would they threaten to cancel a meeting just because you would show your face?
Oh, it wasn't the government that threatened to cancel the meeting. It was the SSE, because they considered me a heretic.
Heretical in what way?
Well, here I am talking about a subject on UFOs, and you're talking about the very famous worldwide academics who are talking about astrophysics and chemistry and all the little subjects, and here's a guy coming to talk about UFOs, so, you know.
Well, you are a doctor, though.
That's true.
And you've done actual gathering of physical evidence by removing things from people.
Yeah, here's the strange thing. You know, when I speak about these things, my information doesn't come from me. You know, I didn't have dreams that I submitted these things to a laboratory. These are reports that are coming from the scientists themselves. So maybe that's what they took in consideration, because the data, you know, the data is sort of overwhelming. So they probably, a number of them, obviously, if they didn't want me there, they wouldn't have invited me or paid for my ticket.
Indeed. I was also curious about a little something I read in there, that some of what you have removed, when examined, has been compared to meteorite material.
That's correct.
In what sense?
Well, some of the metallurgy looks like a meteorite. You know, a large amount of them contain iron, for example, and they contain nickel, and they contain other things that are found in meteorites. But the perplexing thing that came forth out of the scientist who rendered this opinion was that the nickel-iron ratio wasn't quite right for a meteorite. Well, you got to remember, too, Art, that all these things that we sent out are blind studies. They're not, nobody's told where they come from. They could have fallen off of the back of a camel for all they know.
Huh. All right. I guess we should take the time and trouble to roll over what you know and have experienced in Brazil. I know it's a pretty good-sized story, but I mean, we should give people a sense of the magnitude of the stories that are going to be broken open officially in Brazil. And you can do that.
Yes, we can. We're talking about, of course, the very famous Farchinha case of 1996. And how this case today, in my opinion, and others also, represents something that's even more important than Roswell. Now, my gosh, who am I to say anything like that, since Roswell is, you know, the United States phenomena that we've all been talking about for many, many, many years. Several reasons in comparison. One, both involve the crash of what appears to be a non-terrestrial vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
In the Roswell case, there's a lot of emphasis that's placed on the vehicle. Where it crashed, how it crashed, did it crash alone or with two other vehicles, one in Socorro and the other possibly in the plains of St. Augustine. A lot of emphasis placed on the crash, the material, the debris field, and all that sort of stuff.
That's right.
But in the Brazil case, there's not much emphasis placed on the crash, which occurred actually the night of January the 19th, 1996. A farmer saw something that was coming down with smoke or vapor sort of coming out of one end of it, and he looked at it and he saw that there was evidently a piece missing. So he got, you know, quite curious, didn't know whether this was some military thing or whatever it was.
Well, if he could make a judgment that there was a piece missing, that means he saw enough detail of the craft to understand the symmetry of it and see some part of that missing, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It was a cylindrical craft, and as I said, he couldn't tell whether it was the front end or the back end, but from the direction it was going, it looked like it was the after end, and it was releasing smoke or vapor or whatever call it. But it did fly around for a while until it finally impacted with the field. And he watched the impact occur, and there was a lot of debris also from this piece. The largest piece left over was about the size of a Volkswagen bus. But almost immediately, the Brazilian military, the army, was there. And they saw him and his truck, and they asked him quite strongly to leave. Well, Brazilians, you know, for many, many years have had a different kind of government than we've had. It's a kind of a jackbooted thug government they had up until the late 50s when the Brazilian Civil War came about. And so he didn't react the way they told him. He pulled around the corner.
All right, hold it. Hold it right there. And I pulled around the corner and watched. All right, so an incident as big or perhaps even bigger than Roswell unfolding in Brazil. And already you're hearing the Brazilian military is stepping in. Tonight we're hearing the Brazilian military is ready to tell all. My guest will tell us all about it, Dr. Roger Lear.
The Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Good morning. Dr. Roger Lear is here, just describing a disc that was on its way toward crashing with an obvious piece missing out of it. Farmer sees it. Military shows up, tells farmer to go away. Farmer decides not to go away and watches, and we'll pick it up at that point in a moment. Doctor, last night I interviewed a truck driver who had some lights following him disagreeably over his truck for quite a period of time. He finally got fed up with it, pulled his truck over at a stop, pulled out his 45 and pumped several slugs into these damn things that were just above his truck. I advised him against shooting at UFOs. However, you described something coming down, smoke trailing it with an apparent piece missing. You don't suppose it was shot at, do you?
Oh, could that be a possibility? I'm sorry if I gave the impression that this was a disc. It wasn't a disc. It was a cylindrical-shaped craft.
That's fine.
So now that we got that cleared up, yeah, a piece missing out of it, smoking.
Right.
And then we find out from the Brazilian investigators later on that it was NORAD that notified the Brazilian military when this was coming down and exactly where it was coming down.
Well, we know that NORAD can track things in space right down to the nuts and bolts that are loose and in orbit, so NORAD would be able to notify them that something like that was occurring. That accounts for the Brazilian military being on hand. Now, I'm sure their story, our story, NORAD's story, would be that it was re-entering space junk.
Space junk, exactly. Space junk flying around, going here, going there, and finally crashing.
How did I guess?
Now, the recovery operation consisted of several military trucks, and they went to the area. saw the large piece, which I understand was about the size of a Volkswagen bus.
All of this now, according to the farmer who watched.
Right.
Okay.
And what they did was they eventually brought in a crane because this thing was too heavy to lift up on the back of one of their trucks. So once the large piece was removed, it was reported that they spread out about hand in hand and made their way across the field with metal detectors and garbage bags and picked everything up, threw all the bags in the back of these trucks, and they went on their happy, merrily little way. Now, it just so happens that this, as I said, was the night of February the 19th. On February the 20th, I have to say that one of the things I tried to do in the book was to eliminate the rumors from what was fact as obtained by the Brazilian researchers and directly from the witnesses.
Okay.
In fact, I labeled a whole chapter in the book rumors. In other words, these were unsubstantiated things. So what I'm going to talk about is only the things that we know because of either very sincere investigation or eyewitness testimony. So the following morning, at 8 o'clock in the morning, a Brazilian contingency was seen not too far from that area and engaged in a rather strange activity. And they were officers from the intelligence service went down an embankment and captured a being which was described by numerous people as being relatively short, between 4 and 5 feet tall, having a body that was brown-skinned, very oily, large red eyes.
My God, Doctor, the witnesses that said all of this, were they actually watching the military capture this being, or was this a description?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. They were all watching. We have people like carpenters who were up on a roof doing their work and turned around and saw they were attracted by the military and saw them go down the embankment. We have people who were riding bicycles. I mean, just people all over the place.
Holy
happen.
Smokes. All right, so if all of this is it your anticipation that all of this is going to be released in the documents the Brazilian government now promises to unleash on the world?
Well, so far, I don't know if anything is being released on the Farchinha case. And that may be because there was definitely U.S. military involvement with this case.
Uh-huh.
The ones that are solely involved with Brazil, happenings there, in which the U.S. Didn't have much to do with, that might be the information that's released. But we know so much about the Varginha case now, there's really not much that the Brazilian government can release. We probably know as much as they do.
Huh.
So,
because I was going to say, if we get those kind of photographs, my God, it's all over.
Well, you got to start somewhere, and we can only hope by the time that it's all done, if it all comes out, we're going to know everything that transpired for many, many years in Brazil, and probably not too much different than what occurred in other places in the world.
Yeah, but I mean, if they actually released this, I mean, for example, photographs of the being, were they to release that, it's over. So tell me the rest of the story. I mean, the Army captures this being, and describe it again, please.
Less than 5 feet tall, brown in color, very smooth, the skin, kind of oily, large head, big red eyes, kind of upturned at the ends, no hair, and three little protuberances on the top of the head going from the front to the back, one on each side, one in the middle. Beings evidently didn't make any noise, as far as we know, but there were some individuals who said that they heard a sound like a buzzing sound. So we got two get two different types of testimony in reference to whether they made any sounds. Now, that that occurred on January the 20th at 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, around 8 p.m., two military intelligence service officers captured another creature that was trying to cross the street. And this creature was injured. And we talked about him on the last show. What
yes.
happened? We'll go over briefly that again.
Please.
But in the middle, between 8 a.m., when the military contingent captured a creature going down in the woods, and 8 a.m. when the one, 8 p.m. when the one was picked up crossing the street, three girls, young teenage girls, on their way home from work, taking a shortcut, saw something kneeling by a concrete block wall. And as they got closer to it, they thought it was a child. And approaching it even closer, they got a better look. Mm-hmm. And they saw, again, the creature that we previously described. It was kneeling at this wall. And when the first girl saw it, she thought she'd seen the devil.
Kneeling.
It was kneeling.
That's a kind of a submissive posture, really.
Definitely. And when she saw it, as I said, she thought she'd seen the devil, and she screamed and turned around and ran home. Now, the other girl was right on her heels, but she stayed a little bit longer. She stayed long enough to see that the creature turned around, turned his head, and looked at her.
Yes.
And that made her as terrified as the first young girl, and she turned around. The third girl also looked at the creature, and so the three of them ran home. Now, two of these were sisters, and one was a friend. They informed the mother of what happened, and the mother, who didn't have an automobile, ran to the neighbors and got the neighbor to drive her back to the spot where the girls saw this being, and by that time, there was nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly enough, when I was there, I got a good gauge of the distance between where the girls saw this creature kneeling and where the two military police officers picked up this creature trying to cross the street.
How much distance?
Not much. In fact, I have some video footage and photos standing on the corner where the police officers, the military intelligence officers, picked up this being. And I could look up the street and see exactly the wall where the girl saw. So it was probably the same creature, didn't get too far. Now, some rumors have it, you know, that as many as 11 creatures were seen around in Varginha at various times. But for sure, what we know, again, from eyewitness testimony, is that there were two. Now, there was another episode that occurred a little bit later in the morning, where again a military contingent and the fire department came to the same area where the first creature was captured at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
And again, eyewitnesses watched both the fire department and the army from a base called Sergeant's Camp, which was not that far away, watched their activities. Some report a little bit of an argument going on as to maybe whose province this was.
Uh-huh.
Now, the fire department in Brazil is a branch of the military service. It's not like what we have here.
Right.
And they're engaged in a number of different operations, which can be military and civilian. They can capture a wild animal, put out a fire. They can also rescue air rescue or sea rescue, floods, and so on. And then yet they carry rifles, and they are a part of the military. So here was two different branches of the military evidently having an argument with each other about something to do with the capture of one of these creatures. Now, as I stood on this construction overhang, which now exists at the same spot, I was able to look down on the hill where all this took place. And the military people had to climb over a fence and down a rather steep embankment. Mm-hmm. And once they got to the bottom, there was a railroad track. And they had to cross the railroad track, all this, mind you, continually going downhill, until they got to this little small field. And then adjoining the field was a wooded area. Well, they chased this creature into the wooded area. Now, at this point, witnesses say that two shots rang out. And in a few minutes, two of the Brazilian army representatives came out, each carrying a sack over his shoulder. In one sack, there were movements seen, like something kicking. The other sack, there was no movement whatsoever. They struggled to carry the sacks and what they had with them, their gear, back up the hill. It took them quite some time until they got there. Then these sacks were emptied into two different boxes on the trucks. The trucks were covered with a canvas overlay, and off they went to Sergeant's camp.
Holy smokes.
So not too nice a picture. Now, the story of Varginha gets very, very complex, and we have to sort of take it apart each at a time. The let's go first to the military intelligence officers who captured the being that was trying to cross the street.
Yes.
Now, one of these police officers, a young man, Marco Eli Charizzi, very healthy, young Brazilian military person, went out from the car while his companion stayed in the car, and he put his arm around this creature, but he wasn't wearing any protective gear. He wasn't wearing any gloves. And he assisted the creature into the car, got in, and set him on his lap. Then they drove off.
Set the creature on?
Set the creature on the military officer's lap.
Now, this is all testimony from the officer involved?
Testimony from the officers, the other officer, eyewitnesses to the scene.
Holy smokes.
Ubijara Rodriguez, who is a labor attorney in Brazil with his offices in Varginha, and also a 36-year investigator, has done a full case study.
I would think anybody who had a alien creature on their lap would be able to give an incredibly detailed description.
I'll bet he could, too. The only thing is that within 3 weeks, he was dead.
Dead?
Dead.
Of?
Dead of unknown causes until just recently.
What? Excuse me? You mean the cause was just recently discovered?
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
One of the witnesses that I interviewed was the wife of the deceased military police officer, young man Marco Eli Charese.
That healthy young officer.
Healthy young man, deceased. And the interview that I did with the wife was the most unusual interview that I have ever done with anyone, because she couldn't answer any of the questions that I asked her. Absolutely none.
Like what?
What were the symptoms that your husband had before he was taken to the hospital? She said, I don't know. I said, did you visit your husband in the hospital? Yes, but they wouldn't let me see him. What kind of symptoms do you think he had when he was in the hospital? I don't know. And on and on and on and on. Were you given the medical records? No. Were you given the cause of death? No. Were you given a death certificate? No. Do you receive any subsistence from the Brazilian military? No. Do you receive any subsistence at all from the Brazilian government? No. Do you have children? Yes. Then how do you exist? I don't know. Now, just from that alone, and standing there talking to this lady with an interpreter, I mean, it didn't take too much. You didn't have to be a rogue scholar to realize that this woman had been severely intimidated. She was going to tell nothing. In contrast, Marco's sister gave a pretty good report to a British television station, and she described the symptoms of Marco Eli Scharese in great detail.
And said what?
And said that he started complaints with an abscess under the armpit. He had a fever. Finally, he had trouble breathing, extreme pain in his back, and nobody seemed to know what was wrong with him. Now, that remained that way until August of last year, right before I almost finished the book. And I was able to get the report and include it almost in the last chapter of the book because an individual came forth, a Dr. Cesario Lincoln Furtado,
yes,
came forth and told how he was the doctor who was in charge of the treatment of Marco Eli Scherese.
Did he talk to you, physician to physician?
No, I did not talk to him. I was here, and A.J. And Ubijar Rodriguez talked to him in Brazil, sent me all the data, very exacting data that they got out of him. And I can give the whole chronology of what happened until this person died.
Now, is it a fair assumption that whatever the affliction was, it was precipitated by contact, that kind of contact?
I believe so, because the net result was he had a compromised immune system, and they couldn't find any bacteria. They flooded him with antibiotics, but there was no bacteria that were ever found, so I think we're talking about virology, and yeah. the poor guy probably had viremia, and what I can put together from the symptoms...
Doctor, hold it, right. Nice hook location, actually. So he had an alien on his lap. And then a previously healthy person begins to lose or instantly loses his immune system. Okay, the rest of the story coming up. My guest is Dr. Roger Lear. We're talking about a case in Brazil.
Tonight, my body's weak. I'm on the run, no time to sleep.